From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. There's been a lot of discussion this year about a jobs crisis and how too many Americans are unable to find work. But according to a recent report from Georgetown University, there's another, more serious jobs crisis looming just over the horizon, that our country is not producing enough college graduates. The study says as the nation pulls out of recession, our economy will need at least 22 million new workers with higher education degrees, but America will produce only about 19 million of that number. The resulting education deficit, the report says, spells trouble for our overall economy and a lost chance for millions of people to make it to the middle class. But the Georgetown study stands in direct contrast to a question being asked more often these days: is college really worth the investment of time and especially the money? And the answer for some is now no. These analysts say it's time to re-examine our long-held assumptions about the value of that traditional degree. They predict more jobs in the future will not require 4 years of higher ed, and that we need to look at new models for educational and professional advancement, such as technical schools, apprenticeships, certification programs, and online training. Today in The Exchange, how important is that college degree? We'll dive into the debate and let's hear from you. How valuable do you think a traditional four-year degree is these days? Is it more valuable than ever, or growing less important as our economy changes? Give us a call. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or send us a short email, the address exchange@nhpr.org. Joining us from D.C. is Professor Anthony Carnevale. He's director of the Center for Education in the Workforce at Georgetown University. He co-authored that study I just mentioned. It's called Help Wanted. And Professor Carnevale, a real pleasure having you. Thanks for your time.
Nice to be here.
Also joining us from Athens, Ohio, Professor Richard Vedder, an economist at Ohio University who has written extensively about education, debt, and the value of a college degree. And Professor Vedder, thanks a lot for your time. We appreciate it.
Glad to be with you.
And Professor Vedder, let's start with you. For years, there's been almost a universal code drilled into young people. You will go to college. You will be the better for it. Why are so many people these days questioning the value of that traditional college degree?
Well, let me say that I think for many people, going to college is a good idea. It's not. But what I would add is it's not always a good idea. And the reason is, of course, are the reasons are many. One reason is that a large percentage of the people who enter college, for one reason or other, never finish or don't finish in a timely fashion, say within 6 years. Upwards of half the population is in that category, at least 40%. So you have a big college dropout problem that I think is actually worsened as we try to force more and more people into college compared with historic norms in that regard. So that's part of the problem. And the other problem is relating to the issue of jobs and of job availability. And for some people, for some jobs, college education is not required. And we are still producing many of these jobs, and many of them are even moderately remunerative. So I think college is a great option for many. I don't think it is a great option for all.
Well, and Professor Vedder, there's the debt issue, too, which is growing every year for students.
Absolutely. That's another component of this. You have to weigh the costs and the benefits. And while the benefits of college for many students are real, in some cases even growing compared with a generation ago, for another group of students, those costs are high and rising faster than family incomes, and are forcing families into debt, a debt that many people feel they can't afford or shouldn't be taking on.
Well, and Professor Carnevale, I know you disagree, and we'll get into the details of that in a minute, but why do you think, Professor Carnevale, so many people are really questioning that fundamental assumption that I grew up with, which is, you know, it's not whether you're going to college, it's where you're going to college?
I think I don't disagree with anything Richard just said, but what is also clear in the data is not so much whether you go to college and get a BA or a graduate degree, But what is increasingly clear is that for the vast majority of Americans, young Americans, some kind of education after high school or training, it's not necessarily going to even a two-year or four-year school, it's not necessarily getting a BA or a graduate degree. It's AAs bring earnings and job opportunities, certificates, which are have become very popular, which are much shorter than either an AA degree or a BA.
And what is AA, Professor Carnevale?
An associate's degree, a two-year degree that you tend to get from a community college.
Mm-hmm.
And there are other alternatives, apprenticeships. If you're lucky enough to get a job in an industry that trains heavily, let's say public utilities is one, you can start as a pole climber and move your way up an economic ladder pretty effectively.
So, I described in my introduction, Professor Carnevale, I'd love just a little more information from you. You know, this education deficit that you outlined in the Georgetown study, what's behind that deficit, Professor Carnevale? Are people going to college in smaller numbers, or is it the job market training? As I said, the study predicts that 22 million college-educated workers will be needed in the near future, will produce, you know, 3 or 4 million less than that.
The fundamental force that drives all of this is technology, if you have to reduce it to one thing, and that is that technology, principally our old friend, the computer in all its disguises, it automates repetitive tasks or repetitive routines in any job. It leaves the non-repetitive tasks in jobs, and those tend to require higher skill, whether it's somebody who used to be a mechanic that learned to turn a bolt, has to know electronics now, and tends to be somebody that has to be certified in different kinds of engine repair. So technology drives this ultimately, the force of technology, especially since after the 1980-81 recession, has been enormous. And at the same time, the United States' rate of increase in producing people with post-secondary education and training fell off in 1983. In a simple way, technology change and economic restructuring is outrunning the ability of our education system to respond.
So one more question for you, Professor Carnevale, on this. So a more automated high-tech society requires more smarts on the part of the humans running that technology.
That's correct. And this technology is all of the great, more powerful technologies in history, its general purpose, that is, it cuts across every industry, every occupation, and drives automation of repetitive tasks and leaves more highly skilled tasks for people who can exploit the technology, and that takes more skill.
Well, Professor Vetter, I've read you saying the opposite, that labor market data from the Bureau of Labor Statistics indicates a majority of new jobs in the future will not require a college degree. So give us your take on that.
Yeah. So actually, I do agree with my colleague a great deal. I know you like to have a little disagreement to make the show interesting, but in terms of some of the things he was saying, I'm in total agreement. For example, short courses, certificated courses, six-month, one-year, 18-month training programs, some of them offered by non-traditional schools, career colleges, for-profit institutions, and so forth. For many, these are options. But there are jobs that haven't changed much, and technology hasn't changed much. Barbers are doing pretty much the same thing they did 30 or 40 years ago, and hairdressers, and cashiers in a big box discount houses are maybe using little fancier cashiers, but the learning is largely done on the job. Healthcare assistants, who are growing in large numbers, by the way, below the level registered nurse, are becoming large. Indeed, a registered nurse, the Bureau of the Department of Labor will tell you, only needs an associate degree, the AA degree. There's a lot of occupations out there that are growing numerically in number that are not directly very severely impacted by the technology age. at technological changes that Professor Carnevale is mentioning.
Our number here on the Exchange is 1-800-892-6477. And today in the Exchange, we're asking a question that is being asked more frequently these days. How valuable is a college education? Give us a call. What do you think? How important do you think it is to have that traditional four-year college degree? With the current economy, can you really afford to spend lots of time and treasure on that piece of paper? 1-800-892-6477 is our number. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. Gentlemen, I've gotten a couple emails already, and here's one from Josh that I want to share with you. He's very emphatic. He says, I simply cannot believe that you would suggest college is not a worthwhile pursuit. Yes, the costs are beyond ridiculous, and the return on investment is not guaranteed, but everyone, in capital letters, absolutely should go. Whether you end up with a job related to your education is not the point. College is a necessity to becoming a fully realized human being. People who do not go to college tend to end their development at the point they were in high school. We can eliminate many social problems in this country if we all go to college. It should not be considered job training, but life training. Professor Vetter, what do you think?
Well, that sounds nice, but what about the 25% of kids who don't even make it through high school, roughly that? Don't even complete high school. Are we saying that we should give them high school diplomas anyway and send them on to college? Doing things like that or is equivalent will certainly lead to a downplaying in the standards that colleges have because some people simply lack the motivation, background knowledge, the cognitive skills, and so forth, to succeed in, say, a four-year degree program. So I do disagree with the caller in that respect. Again, I'm not opposed to post-secondary education, having been a college professor for over 40 years.
Right. But it's not for everybody. That's what
you're
saying. Gentlemen, we will take more calls and emails after a very short break. The number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. The email is exchange@nhpr.org. And Professor Vetter, Professor Carnevale, we'll be right back. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, how valuable is a college education, especially in an age of rising college debt and rising tuition? Give us a call, The Exchange number 1-800-892-6477, or email us, exchange@nhpr.org. What are your thoughts on this question? How important do you think it is to get a traditional four-year degree? Is it time to re-examine the assumptions that we've always had that you'll go to college and you'll be the better for it? Our number 1-800-892-6477, the email exchange@nhpr.org. And gentlemen, let's go right to our callers now. Gretel's calling from Brownsville, Vermont. Gretel, thanks for calling in. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes. I think the whole topic disturbs me because as the your email that you just read said, it's not only about getting a job, it's about enriching your life. And the gentleman who just responded to the email saying that there are 25% who don't, I think that's a moot point. I think the point is that those who can, it's imperative that we have an educated constituency politically. If we don't have people who can think through a problem, who aren't trained to think through a problem, who haven't broadened their horizons, who haven't availed themselves the most they can in terms of education, We're looking down a dark road politically as well as economically if we don't look at education as more than just seeking out a job destination.
Now, let me ask you a question, Gretel, since you're echoing what Josh said. What about when cost is a real factor? I mean, it's wonderful to go to college, but it's getting increasingly out of reach for more American families. Could you just as much, Gretel, enrich yourself by joining the Peace Corps or riding your bike through Europe?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But is that, I think those are hand in hand. I don't think there are many people who join the Peace Corps or ride for Europe or not college kids who just graduated from college.
Right. There's AmeriCorps. There's Teach for America.
But they all come, have just come out of college. I don't think there's one of those people who just came out of high school.
Well, thanks for calling, Gretel. And to you first, I think, Professor Carnevale, both Gretel and our emailer, Josh, are saying it's about being a broadly educated person. It's about, you know, gaining some life experience.
I don't think neither Richard nor I would disagree that learning has all different kinds of value. Both of us spend a lot of time learning for the joy of it and learning about things that most people aren't interested in at all except ourselves. So, you know, there is a there's no disagreement there. But what is fundamentally different about what we used to call college and what I now call anything you do that's formal learning after high school, the fundamental difference is we live in an economy now where if you're going to get a job at decent wages, yeah, there are jobs waiting on tables and so on and so forth, but nobody wants them. If you're going to get a job at decent wages, you've got to get some kind of skilling after high school. In fact, I would argue that some people need to get skilling in high school because they're not going to go on to college, and simply leaving them behind is not an option. But the in the end, what's different is that the United States is a society based on work. It's the one obligation we all have. The government will not support us if we don't work unless we're disabled or have very good reasons not to work. And in this economy, if you can't get work, you disappear from the culture and the political system. You can't be a very good citizen or a good neighbor if you can't get a job. So educators have to be mindful that if they can't educate people sufficiently to make them employable, they'll never fulfill their other missions to educate people to participate fully in the life of their times. It's just that the work requirement, which we tend to do our workforce development through our post-secondary education institutions, has become a premier function of those institutions.
A question for both of you gentlemen, and then we'll go to our callers again. If college weren't so expensive and jobs so scarce these days, Professor Vetter, would we even be having this conversation?
I think that the nature of the economy and the current business cycle that we're in, which we're in sort of the downside of a business cycle, or maybe we're starting back up, but it's pretty slow. No doubt that has added, I think, to a lot of the attention that this issue has gotten in the last year or two. People are more cost conscious now. They're more worried about jobs. So for some that means we should go to college more than ever because we need the training. For some it means we can't afford to go to college as much because we don't have the income. So the business cycle has, you know, sort of, I think, enhanced the discussion of this issue, which on the whole I think is a good thing that people are talking about these issues.
What do you think, Professor Carnevale? If college were free or at least affordable, would we all be saying, yeah, sure, go to college, have fun, maybe learn something, go ahead?
Well, nothing's free. Somebody's got to pay. And what we're living through is a time when state and federal governments are bankrupt unless we're willing to entertain tax increases that I think are not politically viable in our system. Therefore, if more and more of us need access to post-secondary education training, the hard truth of it is that we're going to pay for it. And that creates huge distributional problems. If you look, for instance, at the Obama goal to make us number one in the world in post-secondary education, which we aren't anymore, we used to be, he's laid down about $30 billion for that. But there's another $122 billion the states are going to have to come up with, and they don't have the money. So unless the public's willing to vote for a tax increase, we're going to have to change the education system from what it is to something that works for more of us, and that'll mean more short courses, more efficiency in that system.
And we're seeing some of that happen already due to market forces.
Right.
Let's go back to the phones, gentlemen. And Carl is waiting in Nashua. Carl, thanks for joining us. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I'm 20 years old. I got married when I was 18, and I helped put my wife through college, and I never went to college myself. I don't believe college is that necessary for everyone, because I have held several high-paying jobs, and I actually own and operate my own successful farm, supplying several restaurants with food.
Wow. Good for you, Carl. So your thoughts on this question, Carl? Not everybody does need a college degree.
No, I don't believe so at all. I honestly believe everyone should get a high school diploma. I got a high school diploma myself, but I honestly can't say it's benefited me in my careers overwhelmingly. Like, I think it was absolutely necessary for life skills, but I can't say I've done anything in high school that really helped me get a job afterwards.
Carl, thanks a lot for calling in. Professor Vetter, what do you think of Carl's comments?
Well, I think Carl is not alone in feeling this way. And again, and I agree with my colleague from Georgetown, that it for 99% of people, or the large majority of people, some sort of training beyond the traditional training you get in a high school is probably necessary. But there are some for whom it is not necessary, and there's for some whom have an enormous ability to learn on the job and pick up skills in that way. And there are some people who are walking into a business that they're inheriting from someone else, and they learn on the job. So there are exceptions to the rule, although I would say that for a majority of people, at least an attempt at some form of post-secondary education is probably desirable. But it isn't always desirable, and Carl's a good example.
And you've said, Professor Vetter, it doesn't necessarily need to be that, you know, 4 years living in the dorms, the hallowed halls, and so forth. It could be, you know, getting some skills and training at your community college or doing some online coursework.
Yeah, and a lot of the four-year training we get these days is really, I have to say this, and it's almost embarrassing to say it, is really in the form of sort of consumption. The students are sort of consuming something. And some of the callers have alluded to this. They're doing more than just getting vocational training. Some of it is probably developing a better sense of what we are as Americans, better sense of being good citizens and some good things. But a lot of it's socialization, partying, having fun. And I'm not against young people partying and having fun. I did a little myself when I was younger. But it is a question of, is that an appropriate use of resources?
Here's an email from Sean that I want to share with you. He, like Carl, our caller, says, I am in the not category. Over the years, I've attained numerous certifications related to building and fire safety. For the past 12 years, I've owned my own consulting company. My company employs skilled technicians, some of whom have certifications and some of whom have completed their college education. We don't necessarily look for formal education in our applicants, but instead I want to see a real desire to work, a desire to fit into our company, a desire to learn about their job they're being hired into. Sean concludes by saying, society needs to recognize that a college degree doesn't necessarily mean a greater skill or a better person. Unfortunately for many graduates today, the degree means someone has wasted a lot of money for a, quote, education that will not support them financially throughout their life and that they will never be able to financially recover from. Wow, Professor Carnevale, what do you think about Sean's email?
Well, just a point to Carl, who's, again, an exception to the rule. He's in an industry that now employs less than 2% of Americans.
Farming.
Yes. So, and is declining. The other one is manufacturing, where at least boys, and in New England, young women, too, in the needle trades and so on, components manufacture and so on, years ago could find work. But that industry is becoming more and more productive. That is, it produces... We've essentially doubled the output with half the workers. And so jobs are declining there. We project another 800,000 to a million decline in manufacturing jobs. So a lot of that kind of work is disappearing. And the other point I would argue here is that while you don't need to go get, you don't need to get a BA, let's say a BA in liberal arts, most people who do, especially at selective colleges, then put, in every case, at some point, you've got to learn something you can sell. So most people, and they tend to be the more affluent, students from the more affluent families, they'll get a BA in liberal arts, and then they'll go to law school, or they'll go to graduate school. So at some point in your education planning, you've got to put a practical point on your education pencil, or you're going to have trouble.
Well, we talked earlier about the cost, gentlemen, and as you both know, colleges draw people not in only because of their scholastic programs, but because of their beautiful campuses, their top-of-the-line facilities, you know, nice athletic facilities and so forth, almost like a resort. I think one of you has written about this, maybe both of you. Would people, Professor Vetter, be attracted to a college which had terrific teachers, terrific programs, but, you know, sort of run-of-the-mill dormitories and so forth? What do you think?
There are different kinds of people, and you've hit on an important point. The community colleges are booming in enrollments, and the community colleges are pretty much no-frills type education with relatively few amenities, fancy rec centers and dormitories and things like that. In fact, many of them have very little housing at all associated with them, and many of the for-profit schools that are growing rapidly are in this category. But it is true that you have a group of students, and many of them are affluent, that go to colleges to sort of consume 4 years of enjoyable living, hopefully gaining some vocational skills or abilities in the process. Sean made an important point almost in passing in his comment, I thought, and that is he says he goes hires people based on their skills, his perception of their ability to perform on the job. And one reason employers hire college graduates and give preference to college graduates is that on average, college graduates are more disciplined, a little brighter, a little harder working. They've shown through their academic perseverance that they can do a job. And so a lot of the hiring is done, higher education is sort of a signaling device, a way of sort of screening out the best from the not so good. And whether that's because of what the kids learn in college or not is somewhat debatable. Sometimes it is, but sometimes the colleges are merely certifying that people are bright and so forth, things that Sean looks for when he looks at his potential workers.
Thanks for the email, Sean. The address, exchange@nhpr.org. The phone number, 1-800-892-6477. Up next is Graham and Derry. Hi, Graham, you're on The Exchange. Welcome.
Hey, thank you very much. The one thing that I was thinking about as I was listening to you guys, and you sort of took a little bit of my thunder, thank you, just with the last comment, what is the purpose of post high school education? I mean, I've got a graduate level degree. Both my diplomas are still in the tube that they mailed them in, because it really is just a matter of saying that I have the ability to learn. And the interesting thing is that my wife has a high school education and then is a licensed cosmetologist. You know, she just did a 15-month program and is outpacing me as far as, you know, as finances are going and this kind of thing. And a similar story with my parents. My mother is a professor at Penn State, and my dad has just a rudimentary education, and so I was just wondering if these guys would talk to the fact that these life skills that people are mentioning and these life experiences can be taught in situations other than college, but that our current educational system in America just doesn't allow for it.
Very interesting. Graham, thanks a lot for calling. Professor Carnevale, I'd love to hear from you.
One point that's raised here is that is, I think, of some importance for people to hear, and that is it's not just getting a degree that matters. It's what you take, and that's principally because people don't really work in industries anymore. When I was a kid in New England, you went to work in boot and shoe, textile, and other kinds of manufacturing jobs, and then moved your way up through the institution, oftentimes moving through a whole series of occupations till you became a manager. That doesn't happen anymore. People don't get hired in industries and work the way up. They get hired in occupations. So what you find is what you take will influence the kind of occupation you can get into. And so that's why a good if you've got an engineering certificate, which I think is a year and several months, at a community college, you'll earn more than virtually all people with associate's degrees who have two-year degrees, not certificates, and you'll earn more than 30% of people who have bachelor's degrees. So you have to be there is a tendency for people to get fixated on the degree, but you have to also be careful about what you take and where you think it's going to take you.
Well, here's an interesting email from Heidi. She says, bachelor's degrees are now so ubiquitous, they seem more like high school diplomas. Most people have them. Most bachelor's degrees do not bestow critical career skills or unique thinking onto the holder. Heidi says, having worked around UNH for a number of years, I also think a bachelor's curriculum is now less rigorous. She says she went to graduate school directly upon graduation, as did most of her friends, knowing that we needed at least a master's degree to succeed as young professionals. Professor Carnevale, I know you've written about this. I think you called it degree inflation.
Mm-hmm. The college degree is the new high school degree, and the post-secondary certificate or degree, and the graduate degree is the new BA. And the earnings returns to BA to graduate education, especially for men, have been skyrocketing for a long time.
Kind of sad, though, Professor Carnevale, because you have to rack up a lot of expenses to get that extra degree. I'm glad I didn't have to do that.
It's an expensive process. Keep in mind, though, if you get a professional degree, you'll earn in real dollars, you'll earn more than $4 million in your working life compared to a high school graduate who'll earn about $1.2 million.
Well, Heidi, thanks a lot for that email. And more of them coming up after a break, so stay with us. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, our earlier conversation with Talk of the Nation host Neil Conan and NPR political junkie Ken Rudin. Join us for this special broadcast tomorrow morning at 9 and again at 8 p.m. Today in The Exchange, we're asking if the four-year college degree is overrated. It's a question being asked more frequently these days, especially in a tough economy and especially with the sticker shock of tuition prices these days. Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477, or email exchange@nhpr.org. Professor Vetter, Professor Carnevale, right back to our callers. Susan is calling from Durham, home to our own flagship university, UNH. Hi, Susan. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes. I know in some countries that kids have a gap year, which is could be like our Peace Corps or City Year, or a year of optional either military service or public service. And I think that that would make our kids a lot more mature, a lot more worldly, more aware of options. If they had that time out before they started college, that right now college is just an extension of high school, and they're coming in like high school kids. I think that they'd use their time better and probably would have more kids finishing within 6 years if they did have that time out to experience the world.
Well, Susan, that's a great question, and my husband actually did 2 years of college, wasn't really sure what he wanted to do, took 2 years off, kind of bummed around out west, and then finished up feeling very focused. So
right,
I hear you on that.
Yeah, the kids are not legitimated when they're doing it, and it looks like they're dropping off the planet.
Right.
So we need to have it structured so that it's still, society knows it's worthwhile and safe.
What do you think, Professor Vetter, a gap year?
Well, I've always thought gap years are nice, that they are not without costs. A person who does a gap year often is not bringing a lot of money while they're doing the gap year, and they're taking a year off their life of work after they finish their education. So it's not costless. I have nothing against gap years. Indeed, I have encouraged in some cases, just as I've encouraged for some kids a military training as an option before going to college. So in principle, I think it's fine. But as we get more and more of our population, a larger and larger portion of our population, going on for what we call college, we're getting more and more people who are less motivated. Not all people are highly motivated. Not all people are extremely bright. Not all people come from families that encourage and nurture learning. So we're getting more and more people who are coming out of high school who are immature or unprepared and need some discipline in their life. So for some of those people, a gap year or a military service or some alternative is not a bad idea.
Here's another email I want to share with both of you from Kevin. He says, I worked in the insurance industry and software industry prior to getting a bachelor's degree. Kevin says, what I found was that a lack of college degree has always been a barrier to the sale during job hunts, despite the fact that I had years of work experience. And it wasn't until actually receiving a degree that I was able to be taken more seriously for jobs. Kevin says, unfortunately, this hasn't changed. Even the state of New Hampshire and government agencies require college degrees for many job postings. So valuable or not, Professor Carnevale, employers require them.
Well, and the American labor market is distinctive in the world in that not much is required. That is, for the most part, Americans are very, very grudging about allowing institutions to force them to get some sort of certification or degree to get a job. We resent that. We have a long history of that. It's why immigrants come here, because if in Germany, if you, in order to bake a cake and sell it, you got to have a license. In America, if the cake tastes good, you can sell it. So our labor market is distinctive that way, and we don't want to end up as a society where people have to carry around college degree like a union card to get in the door.
But he says that is the case.
Well, I think in the main, it's not. In most cases, the way this works is the gentleman who called and talked about, he doesn't look at the degree, tries to figure out if somebody can do the job. That's mostly the way it works. The what employers have learned, remember, there are tens of millions of hiring and promotional decisions damn near every month in America. And what they've learned, it's not just a screen, what they've learned is that, in fact, the people with the higher degrees do perform better. So remember, in the 1970s, when there was a lot of baby boomers coming into the workforce with a lot of college degrees and very little experience, the value of a college degree went down. And then in the 80s, it started rising again because it became more scarce. So, and the advantages of a college degree are, you know, approached 80% above a high school degree, which is why people are trying to get them. That's still true, by the way. So we don't want to overemphasize the point that getting a BA is not necessarily the only way to go. On average, it still will give you the highest earnings.
Well, and here's the bottom part of Kevin's email, and I'll share it with you, Professor Vetter. Kevin says, college doesn't train you any better at thinking through a problem than real-world experience. He says, I've learned my best lessons in life, not college, and the workplace's emphasis on a college degree is extremely misguided. What do you think, Professor Vetter?
Well, some would say that's overblown a bit, but I do think he has a point. I do think Professor Carnevale talks about degree inflation. I use the term credential inflation, that we are requiring more and more education just to do any given kind of skill. We now have about, I think, around 15% of mail carriers in the United States have bachelor's degrees. 1940, I think it was 3%. So even to deliver the mail, something that hasn't changed much over time in terms of technology, we are increasingly saying, well, really it'd be nice if you have a college degree. And I think Kevin's point is correct, that some people are getting shut out of jobs because of this. And the reason is employers don't want to spend a huge amount of money searching around, deciding who to hire. They want to make a decision without incurring a lot of costs. And they see a college degree. They see someone who is likely to be a little more skilled, a little brighter, a little more motivated, and probably picked up some things during their college career. But a lot of the learning and a lot of what we call human capital in America comes after college on the job, and even after high school for those who don't go on to college.
Let's take another call again. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Jason's calling in from Raymond. Hi, Jason. Thanks for waiting. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Good morning, everyone. I'm 33 years old. I went straight into the workforce. I went into the machine shop trades. In my late 20s, I decided to go back to college, and I looked at the community college approach because it was the cheaper way to go, and for the money, I felt it was the best thing for me. I was pushed into it because I got into an injury, which I realized I can't do the physical end of my stuff. So at a later age, I had to look at what is for the money that I'm going to be spending and the amount of time that I'm going to be working after I'm done, was it what approach was the best for me? And I saw the associate's degree for now is what I'm going to be shooting for.
So have you gotten that degree yet, Jason?
I'm almost finished. I've got a few more classes left.
Wow, congratulations. And do you feel like, as we look at the value of a college degree, that this associate's degree will be valuable for you?
Absolutely. I think even after my associate's degree, I think continuing education will always be necessary. My sister's got a master's degree in occupational therapy. She's constantly taking more classes. My mother's an RN. She's constantly going through training. I think no matter what you're getting into, especially someone mentioned the technical, I mean, being a mechanic, my friend's a mechanic, they're constantly going through training, recertification.
Sure.
It's continuing education is always going to be necessary. The affordability is the bigger problem, I think.
Yeah.
And availability as well.
Jason, you know, some folks go into a two-year community college to get the skills they need and go back to work. Some go with the hopes of heading on to a more traditional institution of higher learning like UNH. What do you see for yourself?
I think I'll probably be going to UNH if I decide to go back.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Jason, thanks a lot for calling in. Interesting to hear from you.
Thank you.
What do you think, Professor Vetter?
Well, he's absolutely, this is a good case study here. We have, by the way, a lot of adult learners in America. The number has grown over time, although as a percentage of the college student body, that actually sort of leveled off somewhat, but it's substantial. And indeed, I expect it will grow in the coming years because if for no other reason than the 18 to 22 year old population is leveling off and falling for demographic reasons. And you look at the enrollments in community colleges, you look at the enrollments at the for-profit institutions, the proprietary schools, they're growing by leaps and bounds. More and more people are realizing what Jason is realizing, and they're getting some post-secondary education that they hadn't previously gotten before. I think it's fine. I'm all for it.
Here's a question I want to ask both of you. I'll turn to you first, Professor Carnevale. You know, we've been talking a lot about the value of a college degree in pure economic terms, you know, what job you can get, how much money you'll make. But, Professor Carnevale, you know, we touched on this earlier, but I want to ask you again, what about the value of knowledge for knowledge's sake, that even if I become a mechanic or an accountant or a nursing assistant, it adds richness to my life, knowing about the French Revolution, knowing about Plato. What do you think?
Well, that's right, of course. One of the more profound issues with respect to who gets access to college, four-year liberal arts, and so on, is that ultimately there are only two things that that'll always give back. There are only two things you own in the end. In your life, and one is work and the other is learning. No one can take the work you did away from you or the learning you did. And in any society, it's in the interest of the society on the whole to do whatever it can to hold back ignorance, which is always hard to do. And secondly, it does make people bigger people. And then there's a practical dimension. If you get more education, you'll get jobs where you have power over other people. We all have one vote. But very few of us get to go on the radio and pontificate. So you got a couple PhDs here who tell everybody what they ought to think. So, you know, there is power in learning. It's one of the reasons people climb and try to move towards the professions, because it'll make them independent, and in a very personal way, it empowers them, not just as human beings, but in their community.
Professor Vetter, what about this idea of the well-rounded American, one who knows about our history, knows about civics, knows perhaps about scholarship, even if they don't use it in their profession daily? How much, Professor Vetter, does well-rounded pay off in today's job market?
Well, I think it well-rounded is good. And as one myself who followed a career where I didn't even know what I was going to major in until my senior year in college and was taking lots of courses in French literature and things like that, that in some practical sense probably had little value, but in some sense I think made me a better person. But I would point out that all of this is costly, and it's become more costly. And I would also point out, if you look at college enrollments and the courses that kids are taking in college, that they're increasingly doing courses with a direct vocational application. The number of business majors has expanded enormously over the last 30 or 40 years, communications majors and so forth, but the number of people in, say, majoring in French or in philosophy has declined, relatively speaking. And so Americans, through their own performance and through their own revealed preferences, have sort of turned away from the general education dimensions of higher education, are emphasizing that towards emphasizing other things, and given the cost of going to college, it's somewhat easy to understand why that's so.
Well, now that's interesting. We could probably do a whole hour on that, Professor Vetter. But I want to ask you both what you think. Then, Professor Carnevale, you first, please. Are we losing something there when more students go, as Professor Vetter said, for courses with direct vocational application, like business school and so forth? Are we losing something when people don't, you know, again, understand some of the philosophical and historical underpinnings of Western civilization?
I think in the ideal case, certainly we're losing something. But I have my doubts that we've almost tripled the numbers of people who go on to post-secondary education, that's 2 and 4 year schools, in a little less than 20 years. And I doubt that would have happened if everybody was learning Shakespeare. So one of the reasons, or a major reason, if you ask most young people what they're headed for, or their parents, it's they want to get a job. And ultimately, that's what's driving inclusion. On the other hand, it is absolutely true that we're de-emphasizing general learning in this system, and I think we'll do more so over time. And that de-emphasis is occurring on a class basis. Kids from affluent families get strong general education and move on to the professions. Kids from working class families and low-income families get vocational education and then serve in technical roles or skilled roles in society, but they're not powerful roles. The guy who comes and fix your plumbing may make good money, but he probably doesn't have the same power you do because you go on the radio every day. So, you know, there's there is both a social cost, there's a social opportunity to improve, to expand people's horizons, that is part and parcel of the American guarantee of life, liberty, and that elusive pursuit of happiness. And that's what we're losing. On the other hand, as Richard points out, this comes down to money.
And if it's getting more and more expensive, and you're looking at years and years and years of debt and poverty to get that general education, right, Professor Carnevale?
That's correct. Although it's very rare, we're going to have to increase. Students never pay. They don't realize this most often. But tuition, wherever you do it, public or in private institutions, is only a small share, a relatively small share of the cost of actually going. That is, the schools always spend more on you than you spend on them, except in for-profit schools. So the public hasn't seen nothing yet. I mean, we're paying about half the real cost. And so I think in the near future, we can depend on the cost doubling.
Well, Professor Vetter, real quick to you, given all we've talked about, what would you say to a high school senior listening today who wasn't sure whether he or she wants to go to college?
Well, I think they need to weigh their options. For many of them, college is still a good deal. As Professor Carnevale says, college graduates on average earn a good deal more than high school graduates. So for many, that's the best option. For those who have done poorly in high school, who have poor prospects for succeeding in college, who are poor and are concerned about debt, maybe they should consider some options other than a traditional four-year school. And that those options may include going directly in the workforce, or they may include going to certificated programs, two-year schools, and the like.
All right. Well, gentlemen, this has been great. Professor Vetter, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And Professor Carnevale, thank you again for your time.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer this week is Roger Parmley. The producer is Phil Sletten. Our interns are Emily Johnson and Robin Karyazis. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields. And I'm Laura Kanoy.